The 1895 podcast is brought to you by Off the Ball, official media partner of Shelburne FC. The 1895, the official Shelburne podcast, exclusive to Patreon.
The ball sinks in towards where Davy Rogers is up. Rogers sweeps the left! Oh, Davy Rogers! Oh, what a goal by Davy Rogers!
I'm angry, Tony, I have to be honest.
Murray! Martin Shelburne! Noel Murray! Has she won it for the Reds? What a goal!
Here's a chance up. Shane Farrell at Chelsea 2-0.
I'm sorry, Tony, but I'm angry as well. I was angry before the game. I've been angry for a long time.
And she gets the winning goal here. Slattery into the back of the net. That is what champions do. That is what winners do. Pearl Slattery.
Over the top by Sullivan. Hughes, goal. Shelburne lead.
His cross sticks the biggest.
Kilduffy is the substitute and he scored! Shell's lead!
We are in to the 94th minute and yeah! It's all over!
Shelburne FC are first division champions!
It's our just reward. We deserve this. We deserve this big time.
Here's your host, Stephen Doody.
Welcome to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne Football Club. As always, we're brought to you in association with our proud media partners, Off the Ball. A busy weekend of Easter action. Not so good Friday. Damien Duff crucified his team's performance, followed by an Easter Monday win where the Reds resurrected and redeemed themselves with a 2-1 win against Sligo. Here to chat through all of it is former Sports Broadcaster of the Year, Darren Cleary. Dazzler, how are you?
I think you should be the Sports Broadcaster of the Year with that intro. It was like something off Football Years. Like, it wasn't a good Friday for Chelsea, but Arsenal were resurrected by Monday.
Yeah, look, I said it. Give it a bit of attention. I love it. Save me stumbling off my words like I usually do at the very start and then get off to a bad start. So look, there we are.
I enjoyed it. You know what I did yesterday when everybody else was watching Man City against Bayern Munich?
What did you do?
Well, I spend most of it texting you trying to coordinate a podcast, which was a big effort, and I'm sure at some stage we'll reveal what that's going to be. But I watched the full episode of Dream Team, Season 5, Episode 7, which is, I believe it's called Madness in Dublin.
You could be right there, actually, yeah.
And it was the episode where Harchester United played the Reds, and it was thoroughly enjoyable.
You know what? Loads of people remember it and were down at it and stuff like that. I wasn't for whatever reason. I don't know why. I was a big, big Dream Team fan. It was the only thing about Dream Team was it signaled the end of the weekend. And you were like, oh, here you go. Back to school tomorrow. Every time you'd hear the, you know, the, ooh, oh, I was going to do it. That exact thing, or putting the, isn't it right at the end they hang the jersey up on the hanger?
Yeah.
Oh, what a program. Unbelievable.
Iconic. Absolutely iconic. The sad thing is, or maybe it's a funny thing is, Tolga hasn't changed a bit in 20 years.
No,
like, it's the very same, if not a little bit shitter. And at one stage, there's a shot where they're getting off the bus coming in, and Martin the Steward is trying to hold back a gang of ravenous women who are about to tear apart, you know, sex symbol of the jour, Carl Fletcher. And I'm like, Martin is still doing that, except for there's no ravenous women.
Well, that's debatable. Carl Fletcher actually ends up impaled on a clothes peg, doesn't he, in the end? But a really angry Scottish manager.
I found myself Googling where the Dream Team go, where are they now? And Carl Fletcher's like disappeared off the face of the earth. The last known sighting was he was a lifeguard at a pool in Islington, but he's not acting anymore. He's kind of, you know, he's gone a bit off piste. Couldn't tell you where Monday Bandili is. Ryan Naismith became a bit of a decent actor. He was in The Dark Knight Rises.
Oh, right.
Or maybe that was Curtis Alexander. One of them is one of the Joker's henchmen in The Dark Knight Rises. Or maybe it's The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight. Yeah. And do you know that scene where the Joker's like breaks the pool cue and he's like, we have an opening, but it's only one person. One of the goons in that is Curtis Alexander.
Well, Can I shock you for a minute?
You've never seen The Dark Knight?
I've never seen The Dark Knight.
Great film.
I don't really do films. This is going to sound a bit mad. I watch the same films over and over again.
Like, what would be your go-to?
Rather than watching my go-to is Die Hard. That'd be my go-to. I could nearly go verbatim with that film. Big addiction to that film. It's always just the same stuff over and over again. Just talking about Dream Team, I used to love the psychotic goalkeeper. Viv Wright, was that him?
I thought you were talking about Jamie Parker. Jamie Parker, didn't he get mad into the gambling and, you know, try to kill his teammates, hold them all hostage?
You could be right. Mm. I used to love when all the contracts would be up, like all the actors' real life contracts would be up at the end of the season. They just have a big bus crash or like a big, some big massive fire or something like that to kill off loads of them.
Yeah. Poochie died on the way back to his home planet.
Anyway, right. Well, there's a good 5 minutes spent talking about Dream Team. There's more important issues to talk about. As Darren has mentioned, we do have a special podcast we're going to tell you about, but we're not going to tell you right now. We'll tell you a little bit later on. Are you happy with that?
We'll tell them right at the end.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, I suppose we have to start with Friday, really, don't we? Unfortunately, we have to start with Friday. And it was fairly shite, to be fair. Like, I tried to break it down on the commentary a little bit with Adam, and it's not really anything to break down. We were bad against probably the worst UCD team I've seen in the league in a long, long time. It's probably, is there much more to add than that?
It's just, I was happier last year at times when we got hammered. Like, I felt happier after we got whacked by Finn Harps 3-0. I actually don't think I was as annoyed by the cup final as I was UCD. And I know that sounds a bit mad, but there was just something about it that I think put everyone on edge. Like, it's, everyone came away from that just completely angry and panicked. And usually I'd kind of bemoan some of the more mental shouts on social media. But I probably at this point could have understood the frustration.
Not
agreed with the opinion, but understood the sense of frustration that comes, that leads you to the point of having a mad opinion. Does that make sense? Like, understand why someone's so annoyed. Well, even if they're not talking sense, I understand why they're so bothered or perturbed. Because on paper, like, a 0-0 draw away to UCD, it's a bad result, but it's not the worst result in the whole wide world. Like, you could probably argue that, you know, the losses are worse, but that just felt like a proper kick. And everyone wanted to scrap each other. Me and you had a row on Saturday or Friday or Sunday, whatever day it was, about exactly how bad we were.
Yeah, it did. I worry sometimes I fall into the category of I maybe defend the team a little bit too much, but I think anyone booing the team off after that was, I thought it was a bit mad, like, or even people giving a bit of stick. Online is different, look. Like, you're always going to get people online. Maybe you'll jump the gun a bit, but anyone, like, refusing to applaud the team off, or, do you know what? I don't mind if you want to go and not applaud. That's fine. Go on, you, like, leave when you want. I think if you're staying back to give the team a bit of stick, I think it's weird. I'd be at that for a lack of effort. No problem. If there's a lack of effort or a lack of desire, or like laziness, that type of thing, absolutely hammer players, hammer staff, hammer whoever you want. But we were just brutal, just misplacing simple passes, just wasting possession, giving up chances too easily. We were just pretty bad. But I wouldn't be, I think it was Saturday night we had our argument, because I had one of my saddest moments as a football fan, where I rewatched the UCD game on Saturday night. My ever-forgiving missus was watching Anton Deck's Saturday Night Takeaway, and I was lying on the couch rewatching UCD away.
Was that just to win the argument? Was that just a case of...
No, it was... Yeah. I suppose we're having a peek behind the curtain a bit here, but you are fairly critical. You You have no problem admitting that, I don't think. You are very critical and of a couple of players in particular and stuff like that. And I was like, I don't really remember. That's not the way I seen it. And that's, I love that about football, that like you could see one thing, I'd see something totally different. And then I started second guessing myself. I was going, was I just watching a completely different game? Because we actually weren't chatting much during the game. So, yeah, that's why I went on to rewatch it. And truth be told, I only managed the first half. So that would be a bit of a giveaway. But yeah, look, we weren't great. We weren't great. But I'd say the most interesting part of it was after the game, really, with like your interview with Duffer. Duffer was, he's the first one to defend the players. And like, he always talks about how he loves them and they're a great bunch, but he was very critical on Friday, wasn't he?
He was. I think it was, it felt like a more so a disappointed and a hurt than an angry. Obviously, there's an element of anger there, but I remember in the team news, he made a point of talking about, you know, obviously Derry on TV, big game, team that will challenge for the title, coming to Talca, the motivation. It's easy to gee yourself up for that. Same with obviously a Bowes, Rovers, Pats, like those games inherently carry their own things for players. Like you even Jack Moylan said when he was on a couple of weeks ago, when he plays Bowes, it's the one he rings in his calendar every year because feels like he has a point to prove, and different players get different motivations. And the kind of point was put, like, is it harder to motivate a group of players or a team to go to the bowl on a Friday night? And there was just a real dislike for the sentiment of, you know, you shouldn't need to be, or you shouldn't need anyone to motivate you for a league game representing the club. You should be up for it. And it was kind of not highlighted in advance that, you know, Fridays against UCD at the bowl could fall flat. I think then when it happened, It nearly felt like it was not inevitable, but I don't know if anyone was really shocked because we just haven't played well there. Like, if you remember the second game of last season, the 0-0 draw, the only highlight being a Lewis Webb save that denied them the win, and of course the sprinkler and the wheelbarrow. Like, we just haven't had a great time out there. I remember even when we won 2-0, the manager was pretty critical of the performance because he just felt that it wasn't the standards they hope to get to. So yeah, I think that there was a lot of frustration around, wasn't there?
The sprinkler and the wheelbarrow is like some really strange children's book.
The sprinkler, the wheelbarrow, and Dan Carr.
Yeah. Useless object. Anyway.
I hear the wheelbarrow had a great use.
After, like, I got to talk to JJ afterwards, obviously, for the club media, and it felt a bit like nobody could really put their finger on it, on the reason behind it. Like, I think it was the first thing I asked them, like, is there a reason behind it? And nobody really seemed to be able to give a specific reason. Like JJ said, we prepared just as well, if not better, than we do for every other game. Like, it was a proper week's training they got in, the whole lot. So just one of them freak ones, but with the result we got on Monday night, it just makes Friday a little bit more disappointing, I think. I think I said it on last week's pod with Reggie that I would have been happy probably with 4 points from the weekend. Now, we still got the 4 points, obviously, but it was the opposite way around. So it does make that Friday a little bit more disappointing. But was there any saving grace performances on Friday for you?
No.
No, I'd agree. I don't think that's harsh either. We were brutal from back to front. So,
I will ask one question, Duty. You kind of mentioned pulling the curtain away, like you, JJ, when the manager gave his interview, I'm sure everyone saw it the next day. I'm sure the players watch things like that to get a sense of what's being said or what's the mood or what's kind of being said publicly. JJ had to sit and stand and kind of.
It was so bad. But generally, the order is the manager always goes first. So we always interview the manager first so that we don't have to. I mean, I wouldn't have the neck to leave him standing around waiting. And only twice I can remember it happening badly. Once was Cameron, in Tolkien, I think it was, and that one with JJ, but JJ was just kind of pacing up and down, like waiting on his turn to talk. It was pretty awkward, I have to say. Pretty awkward, but part of me thinks the manager knows what he's doing as well. Like, some of the stuff he said during the interview, I think he was heaping a bit of pressure on JJ, maybe.
And he was brilliant on Monday. Absolutely brilliant.
Oh, like, so good. He was
man
excellent.
Of the match performance. Some of the past, like, I was probably privately a bit frustrated by how safe we were, backwards, sidewards, just playing the numbers, keeping possession, no real cut through, no penetration, no ambition, I suppose, to take the chance. But then some of the passes, he's spraying in Talca, you know, just big switches, crossfield passes, like proper penetrating balls in behind. He was brilliant on Monday. And when you know the ability that he has, I think probably that's why people are frustrated with a lot of the players' performances on Friday, because you know that they're, I don't know, it's not a lack of effort, but it's a lack of hitting levels you should be hitting consistently, you know?
100%. And that argument me and you had on Saturday, that stemmed from, I was arguing about everyone giving out about the whole team playing sideways and backwards all the time. And my thing on that is, that's just, it's part of a team that drops right off and plays really deep and makes it hard for you. You have to go backwards and go sideways sometimes. Otherwise, you just lump the ball forward. Then you're putting the ball at risk and you're not in control anymore. But that's
true, though. Like, we scored by doing that. He scored the winning goal by doing that the last day. And I don't know if you saw John Russell's interview with Adam Leonard on LOI TV afterwards, but he made the point that when they were chasing the game, there's 15, 20 minutes to go, he was really disappointed by how little urgency they showed. Like, he literally said the word too much backwards and sidewards.
Yeah, but they have somebody like Max Matta up there who you could chip a ball up to. We don't have a player like that. I'd have no problem chasing a game with 10 minutes to go. And, like, if you had a box, I'm sick, we always use Boydie as an example, but, like, if you had a Boydie in the box, yeah, lump balls up to him, no problem. But there was no point doing that on Friday, I didn't think. Jack Heaney was just going to mop everything up. So I don't see the point. I'd rather us do what good teams do, in my opinion, and stick to your plan. Move the ball sideways. Sometimes it has to go back to go sideways. You can't avoid that. But, like, there was people, we'd have a throw in and either of the wing backs would throw it back to a centre half. And go forward. What do you want them to do? Like, Jesus Christ. Some of the shouts are mad. Now, that's just football. Like, that's football. You're always going to get that. But, yeah, that's what made me go. The shout about too much sideways and back, that made me go and watch the game back. And I noticed with JJ, he's so good at, like, here's the coaching terms now, Dazzler. Nah. Those little, like, the disguise, little penetrating passes. And they're not always, like, overly elaborate. They can just be little 10-yarders. But JJ has a knack of taking a whole midfield out of the game, which is one ball. Like, he'll slip a little one. And he done not enough of it on Friday, obviously, but done plenty on Monday night. He was brilliant. Adam asked me for man of the match, and himself, Jack Moylan and Matty Smith were the three that were in the shake-up for me. The other one who I probably unfairly didn't mention was Cam. Cam was brilliant when he came on. And Shane will get all the plaudits, as he should, because he got two assists. But Cam was brilliant. I just love the way he runs with the ball. It's so hard to deal with. You're never expecting it out of a player so deep like that, but he's just brilliant at carrying it out. But going to the game on Monday, yeah, we probably have to start with the first half. Actually, no, you know, we'll start with me getting stung on my birthday to have to commentate very late in the day. I didn't even have a pen up in the gantry. I didn't know who half the Sligo players was, where. I didn't know anything. So I have Georgie Poynton to blame for that.
Well, look, all I can do is apologise. I mean this in no disrespect, but you were the ninth choice
You were... That's not even a joke, by the way. There was eight people ahead of me.
Yeah, there actually was. And that was only because I didn't want you to spend your birthday in the gantry. I wanted you to spend your birthday with some waffle fries and some chicken, but needs must. And when we got to Fagan's at whatever time it was, 10 past 6 on Friday, and we had no COCOM, Georgie's under the weather. We send him our best wishes, and he's got a bit of a head cold at the moment. So we will get him back on comms. There was a great reception when we said he's going to be back in Talca. Obviously, a very popular fella around the place for what he did in 2021. And he was someone who actually came out of 2020 with his reputation intact, you know. Always gave everything for the Reds. And we do look forward to having them at some stage. But yeah, Doody, fair play. You took the call up late on.
Well, I had no choice. Couldn't leave Adam on his own.
Yeah, that's fair, yeah.
that's what it boiled down to. Call a spade a spade.
Well, I don't know if you really want to pull back the curtain here, but there was an offer. Someone did offer to do it at the 11th hour, or asked why they weren't asked to do it.
Oh, can we name names here?
Yeah.
Sean Boyd basically was wanted to know why he couldn't do it, and I had a moment in the tunnel with him trying to explain. And I think Gav Malloy knew what I was saying, because Gav just kind of smiled and walked away as I was saying it. But my point was, as much as we'd all like to hear from Boydie, there is no positive that can come from commentating on your own team, because all you're going to do is end up doing a Roy Keane on it, and he'd be hammering everyone. He would have been hammering Paddy Barrett and Luke and all the defenders for not giving enough service to the centre forwards, and it would have turned into a bit of mayhem. So Boydie, it's nothing personal. Might get Sean on again, actually. I think we seem to get a good reaction to the Jack Moylan episode, where we kind of dug a little bit deeper, maybe got away from the standard questions and dived in a bit. And Boydie's definitely one with an interesting career behind him so far.
Is he the special guest?
No, he's not. He's not. Our special guest is even more special than that. And we'll get there, don't worry. Right, back to Monday. Come on, I've notes here, believe it or not. You always put me off. Sorry. Send me off track. The goal that we conceded against Sligo, and the reason I want to go into this is because the manager gave a really... I think it was interesting because it was so simple. His explanation to the conceding set pieces, look, we've conceded a lot. You spoke to the manager. Do you want to kind of explain what he said for people that didn't hear it?
To be fair, I do think you'd probably explain it better than I would, you being the resident football man of the podcast.
I thought that went out with Clarkey, but obviously not.
No.
But it kind of just boiled down to that we're missing Boydie in the box and his presence in the box. And he obviously has a role that he was playing from the set pieces or was due to play. And he basically said that we don't have a lot of height. That was kind of the gist of it, wasn't it, really? Like, that lad, Fabrice Hartman, had a brilliant delivery. His delivery was excellent for the whole night, until the last 10 minutes when it needed to be really good. But, like, when teams are fizzing balls in like that, and I think, again, it's hard to know, because I don't really know whether we do zonal or whether we do player for player, whether we do a little bit of everything, but it seemed to be Tyreek that lost his man. And obviously it was Matty against Derry got blocked out. But, like, you think of Tyreek jumping for a header with, was it John Mann scoring the header?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. It was Lafferty.
Danny Lafferty.
Yeah, who's not a small fella. It's a no contest, really. It's like if you think of it the other way and stick Paddy Barrett up against, I don't know, who's a smaller player that we would have? Keane Levy. Like, match it up that way and it's a no contest as well. So, just thought it was interesting. I think everyone gets too technical sometimes and looks into it too much. You also enjoyed Duffer's name for set pieces, didn't you?
Sets.
Yeah, sets. Simple, see? It's like being in the army. You need to have short code for everything.
Yeah.
It takes too long to say set pieces.
Yeah, I think it was, because it's one of those where, like, you could probably get into a bit of spoof and say, oh, we're a bit unlucky, but it was just like, Sean Boyd, that hole that is left there, where they've put it in would be where he would be standing. We're obviously missing Lukey as well, who is a massive presence, particularly in the air. Like, I don't think when people talk about Lukey's attributes, is heading is probably not one that gets enough credit. So we're missing two very, very important figures. Probably, you know, they're kind of seen as a bit of a weak point at times. So we'll have to find a way to deal with them. I don't know what that way is. You know, if you're more aggressive on them, is there a chance you'll concede a penalty in this league? Probably, even if you don't. Or do you want to see your goalkeeper coming for them more? The knock-on effect of that is he could get caught in no man's land and looks a bit dopey if he gets beaten by it, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I'd go full FIFA on it and just hold triangle for every corner and just let Conor Cairns come out and just see what happens. Go full on like PE tactics and just put everyone on the line and let Conor Cairns run out and see if he can punch it away. Why not? Something different. If he wouldn't laugh.
Cairns has been brilliant, right?
Oh, and so good.
He hasn't made a mistake yet. He's done everything you would expect from him and more. And I think his role in, like, his distribution is very, very, very good. And it's kind of goes under the radar at times, but his shot stopping's fantastic. Duty, I know you'll do the whole, that's his job, blah, blah, blah. But he's been perfect for us. And he's a commanding presence in the box for a young man. And I'd back him to come for those, because anytime he did, he won them, you know. He did his job. He did what he had to do.
He looks convincing. Like, Shells have never been blessed with keepers who are really comfortable coming off their line. Like Steve Williams, no, I'm going to stay right on my line here and you can all do whatever you want. Dino is similar. Clarkey was similar. Connor's more than happy to come out. And I know you're slagging me there, but I'll do the whole, no, that's his job. Go full Roy Keane on it. But more importantly than that for me, in the last 10 minutes, he came out for two corners. He punched one right at the end and he claimed one with, I think, those 2 or 3 minutes to go. They're more important than picking any ball out of top corner. Just took the pressure off, especially the way the game had panned out, where we were under a bit of pressure, but we didn't look like we were going to concede. Like, this all started for me in Waterford. In Waterford away in the semi-final, where, like, I was panicked in that semi-final. I was going, oh, here we go. We're going to concede. Probably two. We'll end up losing this 2-1. This will be typical Shells, blah, 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 blah. And we didn't. And we gave up no chances. And we looked so comfortable. Dare I say, Duffer's probably done away with that thing now that I would have, that fear. I'm confident now going into the last 5-10 minutes of a game, a goal up. We don't look like we're going to concede ever in that situation. And again, as good as we can be going forward or as good as we can be in possession, that's more important. Because picking up points like we did Monday, and again, this is the cynic in me, I always look down the table rather than up. It's just about keeping a bit of breathing space there. But there was real doom and gloom at halftime. I definitely felt that I'd done my usual. I came out of the gantry, went down, had a chat with my dad and my brother. I always try and get kind of somebody else's opinion on the game. And any conversations I kind of heard on the way down were all like, we need to get the finger out here. Were you in a similar mindset?
Yeah, it was a bit of a weird one. I was trying to do more on the Instagram stories, so I was kind of near the tunnel for half time, and someone just decided to stand there and just shout abuse. And it wasn't like the, you know, come on, lads, you know, big second half. It was, is our fucking shite kind of abuse. And wasn't helpful. It was weird. The stewards kind of told him to get away, and he kind of had I'm a season ticket holder. I can do what I want, which is definitely not how season tickets work. Yeah, it was a strange one. Davy Mack kind of had not a pop back, but said, get behind the team. You know, if you want to do something, get behind them. So it was a weird atmosphere at halftime. But I have to say, like, the game shouldn't have been at 7:45. Should have been an earlier kickoff, but the Riverside atmosphere was amazing. It's the smallest home attendance for the season, but there was a brilliant, brilliant crew in there. They brought colour and noise, and I thought the support, to be fair, even after a first half that was a bit mental, like we could have been 2 up or 3 down, it was a bit of a weird one. But I thought the fans were great, especially after some of the frustration of, you know, definitely in that second half of the first half, you call it, we were under the cosh.
We were. We didn't look great. And the frustrating part for me would be that first 10 minutes, we gave up three chances. I mean, we handed them three chances. Like that one, I don't remember who it was. He had only come off the bench, actually. Oh, here you go. Me and Adam had a little glance at each other when this lad was coming on originally. Radislakowski, I think his name was, something along them lines anyway. But his miss was horrific. How he put that wide, I don't know. And it's the old story. If that one goes in, no, it's a totally different game. But we seem to just give up chances, especially early on. And I don't know whether maybe Andy Quinn coming in cold onto the game, like obviously he hadn't played and like he hasn't had a whole lot of game time this year. Maybe he was just caught a little bit slow, and like himself and JR, I think it was kind of got between them a little bit down that side. So there was a bit of that, but we looked vulnerable in the first half, I think, and that was a problem. We didn't look great going forward. We struggled to kind of keep any kind of possession in the final third. The three lads up there, was obviously Levy, Moylan and Matty Smith, looked a bit, they kind of looked like they hadn't played together before. They were just kind of doing their own thing a little bit, and maybe not having that focal point up there, it doesn't help in that either. But I mean, we go on about Duffer all the time, and look, he gives his opinions, and like everyone seems to have an opinion on him, and everyone sees his passion and all the rest of it. But credit where credit's due for the changes he made at halftime. He changed the whole game with those three substitutions.
Oh, the substitutions were clever. You kind of mentioned the fullbacks. Definitely think it was probably an area on Friday where, like, it's hard to pick any particular people, but obviously Shane didn't start then on Monday. But the changes that were made and how they impacted the game, like, they gave us width, they gave us impetus, and to be fair, it's rewarded virtually instantly after the second half, because Farrelly wins the ball high up the pitch. That kind of aggression we didn't really see on Friday night, where, you know, you're trying to pin teams down and close them in, and the ball across for Maddie is lovely, but Maddie's first touch and finish is just, oh. I mean, it's outrageously good. It's very calm and composed. Dare I say, it's easy to do something like that against UCD, because the quality of player you're against is not what you get at a Sligo. But to create that much time in the box, fantastic. Like, Sligo are a good team.
They are. And that's, I think, what made the comeback. Like, if you're 1-0 down to a UCD, or like the way the league has panned out, a Cork or somebody like that, and you're 1-0 down at halftime, come back 2-1, probably there's a bit of, well, we should be beating them anyway. But I'd like to think the likes of a Sligo are probably a little bit ahead of us in terms of where expectations would be, not a million miles ahead of us. And to be able to put in the second half performance that we did, to get the reaction from the substitutions that we got. And I loved how the substitutions just kind of slotted in. They didn't come out and lure you into somebody 30 seconds in to try and make some kind of impact. They just came in, went about their business. Like, it was obviously Cam, Ev Caffrey and Shane Farrell came on. They just totally changed the game. It was interesting, the manager mentioned as well in his post-match that there was a slight change to the way they were pressing. Now, to the naked eye, most of us probably wouldn't have noticed that. I didn't notice it in real time either, but something just changed, and I'd love to know what it was. I'd love to know what the tactical change was that changed the way we were pressing. I think we kind of had an extra man in the middle nearly, and it made such a difference. We were brilliant. Cameron, again, I know I said earlier I didn't mention him enough in the commentary, but his energy and his running and the amount of little tackles he won, and very rarely gave the ball away, he was excellent. And another one as well who had a hairy moment in the first half and had a brilliant recovery was Shane Griffin. I thought he was brilliant again.
And similar enough, you talk about players kind of coming in cold, not having a whole heap of game time. You know, Griff has cemented himself so well since starting in Cork a few weeks ago, what was his first appearance of the season. He's done brilliant. Someone else who I think is worth highlighting, and you know, he probably would be frustrated by his lot at the moment, game time wise, but every time Brian McManus comes on, he's just good, right? He wins tackles, he reads the ball well, he gets us out of trouble, and he gets us moving up the pitch. And I think when you look to that bench this year, the manager said it a million times, so I'm just repeating him, but like, to be able to have players that can affect and change a game and go from being 1-0 down, and you could be 3-0 down, to deservedly winning 2-1. And look, we could have won it by more. Like, you know, Jack has the brilliant chances, a huge recovery. I think it's Mahon whose hamstring or his calf goes, and it looks like Jack is coming through 1-on-1, and he just swoops out of nowhere with an amazing tackle. But like, we had good chances to do that. And it's not that 2-1 flatters Sligo or anything like it. Like, it's a tight game. They probably feel like they deserve something from it, but I don't think it's a snatch and grab or anything like it. I don't think it's we got out of jail there. We robbed that one. No, not at all.
I'd agree there. The other one as well, the work rate and the application from Jack Moylan was like second to none. He worked so, so, so hard. And all those little runs he did, like he might pick a ball up the halfway line and he'd dribble for maybe 15 or 20 yards and then he'd take a foul. Like, that's, ask any defender or centre midfielder, that stuff is worth its weight in gold. Those little breathers he gives to the team just gives everyone a chance to relax. It gives the staff a chance to get messages on if they need to. Like, it's so important. And you mentioned Matty's goal. Shane Farrell's cross was excellent. It's in a really awkward place. It's too far for the keeper. It's very easy for a fullback to get caught under it, which ended up happening. But Matty's composure, I loved how he was so composed at the start to take the touch, and then he just lashed it. He just let loose, put his head down, smashed it into the roof of the net. And look, I've mentioned Matty on here a few times. I've seen and heard of people, you know, maybe questioning, like, he hasn't been good enough and he's not giving us anything. And another one whose work rate is phenomenal, with and without the ball. He brings other players into the game. He's brilliant when he runs at defences. And I was buzzing from that he got his goal. I really was. And I'm raging that he didn't understand what I was saying to him in the post-match about his goal. Because he kind of just looked at me with one eyebrow up and said, what is this fella saying?
He couldn't understand him either, so it's all right.
But Matt, he's a funny one as well. Like, talking about the manager and like the relationship the manager seems to have with the players is obviously a really good one. But it was interesting as well that Matty said in the post-match with me that like, the manager caned him, like really, really hammered him over his performance on Friday. Like, was really heavy and got on top of him. And then it's like maybe the manager thought about it more overnight or whatever, and then kind of put the arm around him. I think Matty actually said gave him a bit of a cuddle after that, and, you know, told him how good he is. And probably testament to Duffer's man management that's the kind of tune he can get out of a player after a Friday performance.
I think there's probably two elements to it. Like, he kind of said afterwards that he didn't speak to them, and that was kind of well documented. But I think it was more so, obviously, one element is you don't speak to them because you don't want to say, the motivational tactic of not saying anything is huge. But also, you know, you don't want to say something you might regret. And he did make that point where, you know, I said some things at halftime that probably were harsh, and maybe I would regret them. And I knew if I went in at full time, I definitely would regret what I might say, because he said he was angry with it, and you know, he took the result home or whatever, and that's something he never tries to do. But it worked for Matty, obviously, because he responded, and he responded positively, and that's what you kind of want to see. Like, it's, I do feel that, you know, the players are mature enough to know that if they're on their case, it's because they can and should be doing more. And if the person who's on your case has literally achieved more than most Irish footballers ever, you probably should be taking that guidance and listening to someone, because, like, if you're not in that team, that Shells team, that Sligo team, any team with ambitions of going beyond that or going to a higher level, well, then you probably don't know what you're doing playing football. And I think that's what he wants to do. Like he said a few times, he wants to help people, you know, unlock potential that got him to where he got to. And that's what he wants to do. So if lads get a grilling, a caning, whatever you want to call it, it's probably because he really thinks there's something special there.
And speaking of potential and wanting players to fulfill their potential, great to see Jad on again. And for those concerned, that was a tactical switch in the end, wasn't it? The manager said he wasn't. Jad obviously came on and then came back off, but manager said it was a tactical decision, didn't he?
Yeah. He said Jad came on at 1-0 down, went back off at 2-1 up, having done what he was kind of meant to do. It's probably an element of getting a defensive body on, but, you know, without saying we're trying to get a defensive body on. Who came on for Jad? Was it?
Let me think. Give me a second. Brian McManus.
Brian did. Yeah. And he was brilliant for that last few minutes. No, he said it was purely tactical. I'm a bit of a geek. I find like the decisions are interesting, but how you get to them I find very interesting. So three changes at halftime is mad. Like do you make that decision when you hit the top of the stairs? Do you make that decision after the first goal goes in? I actually found that very, 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 I don't know, enlightening. I don't know. Am I just a loser?
No, because like three changes at halftime is always it's a risk, because especially when it's 1-0, because if you go on to lose 2 or 3 or 4-0, people can easily start turning around saying, oh, we were only 1-0 down. You know, we weren't miles off. We were still in the game. And then we ended up losing 4-0 because there was 3 mad changes made. So it is a risk. But didn't he say that 2 eventually became 3? Like it wasn't always going to be 3. And then closer to half time, he decided. I think it's interesting. I'd say a lot of people would think that like a half time, the staff get together. It's like, right, what are we going to do? But those conversations were going on from like half an hour into the game.
Mm. That's the part I found really interesting, because like I'd be probably, yeah, a bit naive and think, oh, they figure it out when they get up there. Well, no, he'd said that on 35, he'd figured out what he wanted to do. He'd leave it till halftime. Obviously aware that, you know, if you change it, then you do run that risk of, you know, a complete imbalance in the team. If you hook lads at 35, coming into the pace of a game that's happening, maybe you're better off waiting till the break to make the change. But yeah, 35, he decided to make 2. He didn't say which 2. And then around about 40, maybe it was after the first goal, he said, nah, here, I'm making 3. Went upstairs, chatted to the staff, got their intake, opinion, input, and then made the changes.
And how hilarious was the OG?
Oh, God.
I had 2 people said it to me after the game. I got texts off a couple of the lads saying, you didn't get very excited for the second goal in the commentary. And I was like, because how can you? Like, you're just looking like, and the angle from the gantry was terrible, because I didn't know whether it looked like it was trickling wide. At the start. But just hilarious. And we've been on the end of goals like that so many times, calamitous goals. And it was nice to be on the right end of it. But again, like Shane Farrell, look, I don't think I've been overly critical of him on here, but he hasn't had a great start to the season. I don't think that's being harsh. It's just being honest. But he was really, really good when he came on, and like people are like, oh, it was just a long ball, like it was jammy. But if you don't play that long ball up there, that opportunity doesn't arise where John Mahan makes an absolute balls of it and it goes in. But Shane was really, really good, really positive. Some really good defending out of him as well, which I think seems to be getting better and better at that.
He did very, very well, and I think he does deserve a little bit of credit. Like he was dropped, to be fair, for Monday, and the manager said he hasn't been the Shane Farrell that he himself, the Shane the standards he would set of himself. So I think he responded very well, and it's good to see him. Like, I would much prefer to see us gamble long once than hit the centre backs from the edge of the 18-yard box and try recycle it. Because I just think you just don't know what'll happen. Like, we scored a similar goal doing that in Cork. We probably have used up all our luck for this season on hitting hopes, but at the same time, I just think they're so difficult to defend. You might get a little knock on, it might break kindly. You're just far more likely to score a goal from doing something like that than you are to just a 5-yard pass from your centre midfielder to your centre half.
Fair. And when you look now, like, the league table, we're up to 5th, 2 points off a European spot. Like, it's gas how a win like that and how doom and gloom it was Friday. And then you'd look at that table. I'd certainly look at the table now and say, geez, if we finished like that, I'd be more than happy. And I also mentioned to you and the lads in the chat that we have a nice run of games, I think. Now, look, the manager and nobody can come out and say that, because it's they're more likely to end up with egg on their face. But taking the Rovers game out of it, we do have a nice run of games. Like, we have to play, obviously, Rovers away, it's live on RTE. Dundalk at home, that's live on RTE as well. Then we've Cork at home, Drogheda away, UCD at home, and it even goes far as saying Sligo away. Like, that's a nice little run, I think.
If you remember how awful our start to the season was, fixture-wise, like, to go into the first round of games in the middle of the table is absolutely brilliant. It's a very, 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 very good start when you looked at, beyond the Drogheda game even, that first run of games. I remember when it came out, there was just this feeling of, oh, this, by round one, we could either be in a really, really sticky situation, or we could be, you know, up in the middle, and we're up in the middle. So it's great. It's like, I would say the start of the season has been successful. And the thing I'd be most, happy about would be the fact that we haven't taken the points we've deserved. Like, we've definitely left points out there, and I think we'll improve. Like, if you look at the improvement in that team in 2022 between the first series of games and the last series of games, bearing in mind we probably had better results in the first series of games and the last series of games, but the growth, the improvement of the performances, like, I would be very, very comfortable and happy on the trajectory that we're on.
I would as well. I'm very happy with the start we've had. As you say, like, leaving points behind, straight away to draw it again. Like, add 2 points to what we have, and, like, you're right up there, you know. So, well, things are going well. The two obviously big negatives. The one Friday will be Gav Malloy going off injured, and obviously Monday, Mark Coyle went off injured again. Do we have any kind of update on the lads?
Yeah, Gav's x-ray came back all clear.
No breaks, Lord,
or anything. I think it's a case of the swelling and all that, so you have to wait till that gets down to get a full picture of it, but it looks like it's ankle ligaments. So he's in the boot, and there probably will be an update maybe by Thursday team news. Thursday's tomorrow. So yeah, there might be an update on that. Mark Coyle, the manager said, looks like a kind of a re-trigger of the same hamstring injury, but obviously not as severe. You can kind of tell from Mark's face, and he was like, same thing again. And the most annoying part is he's been, since he came back, he's been really good. Very, very solid. Like, ability to win tackles, ability to get us moving and up the pitch. Like, if he is out for any extended period of time, he'd be a big loss.
Yeah, he's our best midfielder, I think. Among all that, we have a big game Friday. It's a big, big game. One of my least favourite grounds to go to. Don't know why. It doesn't get the juices flowing for me whatsoever.
Soulless, cavernous, windy. People argue it's the best ground in the country. I'd argue it's probably the most polished ground in the country, but is the least amount of character of every stadium in the country.
Yeah, I would agree. It's obviously Rovers away. Look, I keep saying this, Rovers on paper had a bad start. They were playing really, really well in most of those games. Just few mad things happened. And I just kept saying all along, these lads will end up putting a winning run together. They could easily go win 6-7 games in a row, and I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest. They've obviously had back-to-back wins. They got the win against Bowles, and then they beat UCD. It was a 3-0, I think, on Monday night. So yeah. What are you expecting? How are you rating their chances?
I watched a chunk of that UCD game back, and UCD were poor. Like, they were just... UCD turned up the talent. Like, in a similar way that we played in UCD, in which, like, we turned up to UCD thinking, oh, look, we'll do what we can here. They just looked flat. They didn't really look like they had any desire or spirit, or they looked like they didn't want to be there. And the quicker they got out of there, the better. The quality of the goals, like, Rovers did not have to work very hard for the first goal. It's practically a tap in, like, and they give them a bit of a hiding. I wouldn't have anything to fear in any way, shape or form. Like, we went there last year, obviously the 2-0 game wasn't great, but by the time we got to the end of the season, the famous Reggie Robb tweet that saw us run afoul of the FAI's disciplinary union and a $2,000 fine, which Reggie is yet to pay, but by the end of the season we were competing, and we should have been we should have won that game. I think the manager describes it the last day as one of the great games he was involved in, as a manager, player, whatever. And it was like, it was just the drama of it was off the charts. But yeah, you'd have no real fear going there. We played well when we played them. Do you know what? You made a point earlier on the podcast where you said that the kind of mood changed, where you never really felt like, even at 2-1, that we were clinging on to grab the win. And when Sligo had the ball and we're trying to magic something up, like, we never really felt like we do typical Shelbourne, here we go. I think I look back at that Rovers game at home, and it felt like the mindset, definitely in the stands, I don't know about on the pitch, definitely in the stands, changed, where, like, when the board came up for additional time, it was the Shells fans who were off their feet, like, absolutely delighted that it was 6 minutes, and thinking, come on, we can nick a winner here. Where, you know, last season we would have been groaning and sighing at 6 minutes, thinking, oh, Jesus, what's going to happen? So I do feel that there's a confidence going there, which I know sounds a bit mad because they lose so rarely there, but, like, I don't think we've anything to fear.
I think it's that old thing. We're set up to play against teams like that, really. I think frustrate teams, and then you're going to have the likes of Jack Boyle and Matty Smith going the other way, who can cause huge problems. So, oh, I'd be similar. I wouldn't be fearing going out there at all. Look, famous last words. You know, could easily end
Rory
up
with Gaffney, two headers, two corners, 2-0, game over.
Could easily end up with a, you know, a 3 or 4-0 type job. But look, I hate the term. It's like a free hit, and I know the manager hates that type of stuff as well. But it is. I mean, their season isn't going to be defined by playing Rovers away. But at the same time, nicking a point out there would be a massive, massive result. Because, as I say, we've a decent run of fixtures after that. So a good performance, run them close, cause them problems, and I'd be happy enough with that. Get out with no injuries, no suspensions. And yeah, just have a good, solid crack off them. Give me a prediction.
I'm going to go 1-0 Shells.
Oh, that's brave. Brave.
I know. I think if you measured all the predictions I've ever done on the podcast, Shells would win the league every year by 120 points.
Troy went for a 6-0 against UCD, so...
Yeah, ease it.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say much. I would go for a 0-0. I think a 0-0. Frustrate them. Don't give them anything. Didn't we concede early enough out there the last time?
Yeah, but we were back into it by half time. Farrell scored twice.
Was that game? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We conceded both. We conceded early in both games.
Yeah, I think I missed the Rovers away
after like 30 seconds.
Yeah, wasn't that, weren't we well beaten in that game?
Yeah, yeah. We lost 2-0, but we never really.
Yeah, no. That's the one I'm thinking of. Don't give anything away, silly, early on. Like, if we start the way we started against Sligo, I mean, forget it. You'll be 3-0 down before you know where you are. But I'm going nil all. I'm going to stick with nil all. And a Rovers red card.
But, dude, we actually could have been 2-0 up in that game. Like, Jack has a great chance. And instead of lashing into the top corner, he kind of tries to side foot it past McNichols. Like, I know the start to the Sligo game wasn't wonderful. But at the same time, like, if we'd have taken our chances, if we'd have gone 1-0 up in 2 minutes, like, I don't know if they would have got that chance. I don't know if they would have hit the crossbar. Like, it's...
No, but I mean in terms of just giving up those soft chances so early.
Yeah, like, I think if we're 1-0 up, we don't give up those soft chances.
Yeah, true. Fair.
Here, before you get to the end, because I know you like to get to a finish line when you see, once we tick over 50 minutes, you're like, right, blow it up, ref. But did you enjoy your favourite goalkeeper conceding an absolute howler?
Oh, he's the softest goalkeeper in the country. No, well, yeah, we may as well say it. Big windy bastard. I mean, that is, but I'd argue both goals. That second one, somebody tried to make an excuse. Oh, went through a load of bodies. Dad, stop. Don't be annoying me. He is the most average goalkeeper you'll ever find. He played a massive part in us getting relegated in 2020 because his wrists are made out of Weebix. Forget him. He's brutal. I cannot wait for Drogheda away. I'm thoroughly looking forward to it.
Wow.
Yeah, so you get me going. I think I'm real happy. We were both in great form coming on to this thing. You start mentioning him and then I just get annoyed. I've never known somebody to want to be a victim so much. The carry on album is desperate. You'd swear he was a player when he played for us. Like, we literally got stuck with him because we couldn't find anyone else.
Yeah.
He's like that last kid picked in PE. Like, you're stuck with him, so you can't really have too much of a pop off him if he's bad because, well, he wasn't our choice anyway, but look, I digress.
It was enjoyable that he conceded 6 on his last trip to Tolka before, obviously, the Dower 0-0 draw.
Yeah, we like to enjoy these things.
Yeah, but it was a terrible mistake. Like, what was he at?
Oh, I don't know. I just don't know. But again, hilarious stuff. And I did thoroughly enjoy it because those Monday games tend to get a bit lost. For me, like, I always forget. I'm in a kind of a routine where in work, when I take my lunch on a Monday, I'll sit down and watch the highlights of the Friday night games because obviously all the days were a bit thrown off. I forgot those highlights, so I watched them yesterday on my lunch and I was sitting in the van about to bury my face into a Sambo dazzler, and I just burst out laughing when he done what he did. Oh, big windy bastard. Anyway,
I knew you'd enjoy that the most because it was just... It's, you know, some people, they deserve their lot in life, and that was a very deserved mistake. His last trip to Tolka, he stuck the middle finger up at a child.
Yeah, that was... it was one of them where we were all sitting down there together, and I think I turned around to you, did you see that? Did he actually just do that? Like, a small child. I don't mind them giving a bit of stick back to the crowd. That's fine. Look, they get enough abuse to throw a little bit back. But I mean, oh, giving a finger to a child. Can't do that. Definitely can't do that. Anyway, enough about him. He's taking up minutes here. This is like when we give our time to Shelbyville. No time for it. Dazzler, we have a very special guest coming up, don't we?
We do. We might save it for next week's announcement because it won't be next week's podcast. It'll be the week after that.
Oh, can we do that after telling people at the start?
I mean, you can do whatever you want. It's your podcast, pal.
Let's tell the people, Dazzler.
Are you sure?
Let's tell them, yes. Because people can stew in the build-up and they can look forward to it. And yeah, I say we tell them. What do you reckon?
Well, I told everyone Georgie Poynton was going to be on comms. It ends up just being you, so.
Well, I'll take the hit on this one. You organised it. You've done all the heavy lifting. But we will finally, on the 1895 podcast, an in-depth interview with the great Damien Duff. Finally, he's coming. we've agreed, we found a mutual time that suited everybody, and that was the only issue. He wants to come on. He wants to chat to us. It was just trying to nail down a time when we could do it, and it's done. So we will have Damien Duff here on the 1895 podcast on the week of Dazzler.
The 26th.
Happy days, the 26th. So you'll hear from the manager then. Dazzler, we're out of time. This timer's about to give up on us.
I was going to ask you, are you going to ask him what's his least favourite part of a fry?
I mean, can I ask him that?
I asked him, was he going home to eat Easter eggs on Monday? So I suppose, yeah.
So you're telling me I can ask the former Premier League winner, played in World Cups, 100 caps for Ireland, and I can ask him what his favourite part of a fry is?
You can ask him anything you want.
Well, for all that and more, make sure you tune into that pod. We'll be back next week as normal. Who'll be the guest? Who knows? Because I don't know.
That's Red Sails, not the caravan of love. Can I make an executive decision here?
You want Red Sails back?
I want Red Sails back. Not the ball. Official media partner of
Shelburne. I'll do that for you.
For all the latest sports,
Mr. Domino, take it away. Thanks, Dazzler. One.